All right, this is Enemy Combatant Radio, getting a late start today with the news headlines. We broadcast our new show every Monday from 7 to 8 p.m. on Pirate Cat Radio, 87.9 FM. Also, you can hear us in the East Bay on 104.9 FM and online at enemycombatantradio.net. So we're going to switch over to the headlines. Also in the studio today, we have Christina and Nicole. So,
hi.
All right, I'll start things off. The actually, all right. 10 Bay Area residents, who include animal rights advocates, alternative media members, and prisoner rights activists, as well as other members of the Bay Area progressive community, have been subpoenaed to a federal grand jury in San Francisco. The first hearing is scheduled for Wednesday, June 22nd. Supporters of the Bay Area residents, as well as all those who seek to defend free speech rights, have been invited to attend. The hearing will take place at 9 a.m. at the federal courthouse at 450 Golden Gate Avenue in San Francisco. This date is subject to change, so people can check FBIWitchHunt.com for any updates on the grand jury. Activists say the grand jury is a government fishing expedition designed for purposes of intimidation. Meanwhile, at least 8 activists have received subpoenas in the past week for a similar grand jury being convened in San Diego. On Wednesday, June 22nd, at 7 p.m., immigrant rights activists will be holding a strategizing meeting to fight the Minuteman Project at New College in San Francisco. In April, under the rhetoric of fighting terrorism and protecting the economy, the Minuteman Project, an armed and racist vigilante organization, organized patrols of the Arizona border with Mexico. They are now expanding the border patrol to New Mexico, Texas, and California. In California, one patrol is scheduled to begin on July 18th, another on September 16th, which is scheduled for Mexico's Independence Day, and a third patrol will be held in October.
Okay, Bay anti-war protesters are returning to the streets with a revolutionary march against war and empire on June 25th in Palo Alto. Protesters will meet at 7 p.m. in Lytton Plaza in downtown Palo Alto, University Avenue at Emerson, or 2 blocks from Palo Alto Caltrain Station. Anarchist Action Palo Alto will be holding a press conference and community information event at 12 p.m. Tuesday, June 21st at Lytton Plaza. A press statement will be given regarding the June 25th anti-war protest, police misinformation, and preparations for repression of the demonstration and the nature goals and structures of anarchist action.
Last week in Lexington, Kentucky, a meal of toxic coal sludge scraped out of a stream in eastern Kentucky was delivered to the president of a coal advocacy group, and hundreds of concerned citizens attended an anti-mountain top removal rally and march that ended at Kentucky Utilities headquarters. Organizers described it as a successful week of actions to spread the word about the environmental catastrophe as entire mountains are leveled for the extraction of coal, which is itself a highly polluting fuel. Last week, there was also a large protest in Richmond, Virginia against Massey Energy Company.
In Chicago last week, 700 to 1,000 people took part in a solidarity rally to mark the second anniversary of the start of the strike of the Congress Hotel in downtown Chicago. The rally involved a picket line spanning the entire front of the Congress Hotel. Last year, the anniversary was marked with an assortment of dramatic actions, while this year, the anniversary was accompanied by a more festive mood with a mariachi band and sound system playing music.
With just over weeks to go before the Group of Eight summit begins in Scotland, final preparations are underway. The G8, comprising France, Germany, Italy, Japan, the United Kingdom, the United States, Canada, and Russia, meet annually to formalize policy on international issues. Climate change, immigration, trade justice, economic development in Africa, Middle East reform, and nuclear non-proliferation are amongst the items on the agenda for this year's summit, which will be held from the 6th to the 8th of July at the Gleneagles Hotel in Scotland. The UK Indy Media site will be facilitating independent coverage of the actions and events. While the G8 prepares to meet behind police lines at Gleneagles, counter-mobilizations and demonstrations are being organized around the world. In Sheffield, there were demonstrations at the G8 Justice and Home Affairs Ministers meeting earlier this week, whilst in Glasgow, the Create Counter Summit has already begun. Demonstrations are being organized by three broad coalitions with links across Europe and the world. Descend, G8 Alternatives, and Make Poverty History Overseas. In the United States, Anarchist Action is organizing a West Coast anti-capitalist mobilization against the G8. However, most events are concentrated in Scotland during the first 8 days of July, including people setting up an eco-village convergence and camping center, and blockades of the G8 summit on the first day. These events are mostly linked to ongoing campaigns around issues like anti-militarism and the arms trade, poverty and debt, the market and corporate free trade, environment and climate change, and immigration and borders.
Okay, back to San Francisco. This Friday, June 24th, trans people and their allies will be holding simultaneous community building events in San Francisco and New York City. In San Francisco, the Trans March will kick off Pride Weekend. It will start at 3 p.m. in Dolores Park with a celebration featuring speakers, performers, and musicians. At 7 p.m., the community Trans March will head down to City Hall. And this will be followed by a Pride celebration on Sunday, June 26th at Civic Center Plaza, featuring the first ever transgender pavilion and trans stage. The trans community is demanding social and economic equality, an end to violence and discrimination directed towards trans people, respect, acceptance, and civil rights.
Service department employees, whether hired or not. As of June 1st, 2005, the Doten family sold their Honda dealership after 40 years in Berkeley. The service department employees, mechanics, service writers, detailers, and parts technicians were represented by the Machinists Union, IAM Local 1546, and Automotive Teamsters Local 78. The new owner told workers that he would recognize the union. Workers asked him to honor their old union contract with a one-year freeze in wages, giving us time to negotiate a new contract, but the owner refused. They asked him to maintain the current staff for a period of 100 days before making any decisions about which employees to keep or terminate, but once again the owner refused. The owner replaced experienced workers with friends and less experienced workers. None of the employees who clean and detail cars have been hired, and cars are being sent off property for this work. All of Doten's service department employees, whether rehired or not, decided to take a stand against the owner's actions. They are filing unfair labor practice charges against the owners at the National Labor Relations Board. For the past few days, they have been picketing in front of the dealership alongside a giant inflatable rat to scare away any potential customers.
six Iraqi labor organizers are touring in the U.S. to speak with the labor movement, and they are in the Bay Area this week. Their plan is to educate U.S. trade unionists about the conditions faced by Iraqi workers and their struggles, and to build direct worker-to-worker, union-to-union solidarity and support for Iraqi trade unionists in their effort to build a progressive, secular Iraq. The Iraqi spoke in San Jose on Sunday, June the 19th at 1:30 p.m. They were in Berkeley on Sunday night at 7 p.m. They will speak in Martinez on Tuesday, June 21st at 6 p.m. Unemployment in Iraq stands 50% nationwide and as high as 70% in some areas. Workers face lowered wages, long shifts without additional pay, and difficult living conditions. Many Iraqi workers have resorted to labor actions such as strikes to win better conditions.
Okay, that wraps up our headlines for right now. This is Enemy Combatant Radio. Thanks for tuning in. We'll have today's feature coming up soon, so stay tuned. You may be listening on Pirate Cat 87.9 FM.
You.
We are back. You're listening to Enemy Combatant Radio and the weekly newscast that's broadcast over Pirate Cat 87.9 and 104.9 FM in the East Bay. This is Christina here, and I've got Sarah Sphinx on the other line, who's going to talk about a benefit that is going on this Wednesday. Right, Sarah?
Right. So I'll talk about the benefit first. It's a benefit for the San Francisco Needle Exchange, which is the only needle exchange in the Haight-Ashbury area. There's numerous exchanges in other parts of the city, but I think that we are a pretty unique one in that we serve people who are primarily young and homeless. Though that's not everyone we serve, it's kind of a unique group of people that really don't access sites in the rest of the city. And the issue that we're dealing with right now is that we lost our funding, which we were receiving from the Department of Public Health. And we're meeting with them right now, as well as the Board of Supervisors, to sort of talk to them about the fact that there's going to be a huge gap in services if this particular exchange is closed down, because the other exchanges won't really cover, you know, the same people. So we're pretty hopeful that we're going to be able to work that out. But in the interim period, we, you know, still need funding for needles and rent and supplies and
so,
all that sort of good stuff.
So how does the Haight-Ashbury Needle Exchange differ from other needle exchanges? I mean, what you're saying that it provides services that other places won't. What in particular would that be?
Well, I didn't so much say services that they won't, but it is a service in a particular area where people, you know, don't so much leave the area to go to other exchanges. Like, a lot of our clients wouldn't go down to, say, the Tenderloin to go to a needle exchange. They would probably more likely, you know, end up using needles over and over again and buying needles and, you know, from people on the streets, which isn't always the safest sort of a situation.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's okay. You know, and also I think it's just sort of the dynamics of the people that come to our exchange as well. It's like we're very culturally competent in dealing with youth as well, and I've talked to some of the people that come to our exchange, and they're not always comfortable going to some of the other exchanges. It's just that we're more familiar with working with that group of people, and I think sometimes it's harder for them to go to other exchanges in the city.
So would you say you service a lot of youth drug users, intravenous drug users, or is it...
Dominantly.
Dominantly. Are they typically homeless youth?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay, and so what's the history of the Haight-Ashbury Needle Exchange? When was it formed? Do you know?
I believe the late 90s, around 97, and it was originally sort of an underground illegal exchange in front of the park, but when I believe, I'm not really bad with this whole history part of it, but I believe it was when a state of emergency was called that it was able to become a legal exchange, and it also began receiving funding from the Department of Public Health. So it became legal and was also brought under the umbrella of the Haight-Ashbury Free Clinics at that time. So it had been legit as far as that goes ever since that time.
So why are they facing a decrease or a loss in funding?
Well, I think it's, you know, sort of like a trickle-down effect, you know, from a lot of policies that are going on now with the government. But basically, the Department of Public Health does have sort of this grant process now that you go through to get a renewal, and we didn't score high enough in the grant process. So it wasn't that they just cut it, but that us, as well as a lot of other prevention programs, did not get refunded. So I'm not sure if it's that, you know, in general the amount of money is less, or just that there's a greater need for a lot of organizations to depend on that particular grant. But there's a lot of places like the Urban Health Study and, you know, other organizations that have had to close down because of this current funding cycle.
And so what services does the Haight-Ashbury Needle Exchange provide, and for whom?
Okay, well, primarily we do, you know, people can come in and drop off their dirty needles. We will exchange those for clean needles, but also we do overdose prevention groups. We do vein care groups.
What's an overdose prevention group? What's that like?
Well, basically, a couple of us will be in the exchange, and we will, you know, announce it to various people in the community. We'll have flyers like a week before, and we will teach people the basics of preventing an overdose, recognizing what is happening when someone is overdosing, and then rescue breathing or administering naloxone.
And what is naloxone?
Naloxone is a opiate blocker. It's basically can be administered intramuscularly, and it will stop the like physical symptoms of overdose. You know, like the respiratory rate decreasing. So it can pretty much bring somebody out of an overdose very quickly. It's what paramedics usually use, but we are able to. We have a doctor on site 3 days a week. That can write prescriptions for naloxone.
Uh-huh. That's amazing.
So that way people, you know, if they're with somebody and, you know, they overdose, they're able to, you know, with that and rescue breathing and, you know, other tools that they learn often save a life.
And so what are the other courses or classes that you offer at the Haight-Ashbury Needle Exchange?
Well, occasionally we have vein care classes, and then we also just have a ton of pamphlets. And I think a lot of times we have just a really open environment where people will come in and talk about what's going on with them, whether it's that they're trying to, you know, decrease their use, or they're trying to find a new vein, or they're trying to detox. Like, all sorts of topics come up, and pretty much whatever anybody wants to know, you know, we have an open dialogue about that. We also have healthcare on site. It used to be 3 days a week, and now we have a doctor who's away. But, you know, we try to have a doctor or a nurse practitioner on site. Every day we have exchange open, and they can do, like, wound care and stuff, which is really great, you know, from, like, a city financial viewpoint in that it really cuts down on the amount of people that later on have to access the emergency room. Because they're able to get care, you know, as soon as the problem arises, rather than waiting to be seen later on.
So can you talk a little bit about the approach that the Haight-Ashbury Needle Exchange takes? I mean, it sounds like it takes like a harm reductionist kind of approach toward drug use.
Oh, completely.
Talk about what that's about.
We identify ourselves as, you know, being part of the harm reduction movement, and I think that's basically it. You know, we strive to reduce the harm that users face in their life. And, you know, the harm reduction approach is a sort of an empowering approach where, you know, we help people identify the harm in their life and then decide, you know, what to do with it. It's not any sort of, you know, it's definitely very different from an abstinence-based approach, a very non-judgmental approach. And we feel that it really works because people are not, you know, any positive change that people can make in their life is really, really helpful for their life and very empowering. And it's also pretty much what the Department of Public Health has been working with lately. They've been working from the same harm reduction approach.
So how many hypodermic needles or syringes does the Haight-Ashbury Haight-Ashbury Needle Exchange dispose of on a daily basis?
I don't know if I have those numbers, but let me try to think of how many we probably receive. I don't know, probably 500 to 1,000 in a day, and that's the total rough estimate guess.
Wow.
If I had, like, in front of me a stat sheet, because we take stats, I'd be able to do that.
Uh-huh. Okay. And so what do you do with the needle exchange?
I have been a needle exchange outreach worker for some time, so I basically I also work at the drop-in center. They're somewhat connected, but I just basically work within the community and, you know, talk to people that identify as injection drug users. I let them know about what's going on at the exchange and just basically interact with them, you know, on whatever level they're comfortable with and, you know, help them to access services and resources within the community.
So do you go out into the community and offer free hypodermic needles to people?
Well, we don't give out hypodermic needles when we do street-based outreach. We, you know, give out other basic safe injection tools and hygiene supplies and food, but they have to actually come into the exchange to get hypodermic needles.
Do you take dirty needles when you're out on the streets?
There have been instances where people would come up to me and be like, oh, I found these, you know, somewhere, people who normally don't come to the exchange, and we will bring them back to the exchange. But otherwise, you know, people know that they can just come in and drop them off.
And what are the hours?
It's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m.
Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 5 to 7 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And so can you talk about the controversy over the needle exchange? I mean, I know it's still fairly new, and it's becoming more acceptable, particularly, it seems, at the local political level. One could say, like, the Department of Public Health is supporting the needle exchanges, but I know that, you know, in the past and still today, there are people that look down on that. They see it as enabling drug addicts. And I mean, can you comment on some of the challenges the needle exchange has faced?
Definitely, like you said, there is still the group of hardcore, you know, abstinence proponents that believe that by educating people in any way about drugs or, you know, making safe supplies accessible, you're promoting drug use. And I think that's complete bullshit. I think that, you know, even when supplies were harder to come by, there people still use drugs. You know, and there's many reasons why people use drugs. It's not something that we can really, it's really fair to put a judgment on, you know, and it's, you know, it's definitely an enormous social controversy. I would say that, you know, our viewpoint on it is just that, you know, people will use drugs and they really deserve, you know, from a public health perspective, you know, the best information they can get, you know, about the dangers, of course, the side effects, but also, you know, how to use with, in a way that will reduce the harm that they face.
Okay. That's great. And so the needle exchange initially was sort of a renegade kind of renegade. It was sort of like an illegal operation, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Can you talk?
Are still many places where, you know, people are arrested for distributing clean needles. Like I was just reading that that happened recently in Sacramento. I mean, it happens in a lot of places. A lot of places in the United States are still very much not into the concept of needle exchange.
So where did the San Francisco Needle Exchange, it first started in the Hate, in Golden
Gate
Park?
Yeah, and it was started by, I believe, a woman named Ro and a guy named Maddie. They're both fairly infamous. And I believe they were both arrested at least once, you know, for distributing clean needles to users.
Oh. All right, and so what are the challenges that the Haight-Ashbury Needle Exchange faces if they lose this this funding from the Department of Public Health?
Well, basically, you know, we lose the sort of legitimacy that we've had as a needle exchange. We face losing our actual building that we are working out of right now. You know, we do need to actually buy syringes and supplies, so we lose the ability to do that. So we are really hoping that we'll be able to work something out.
So can I ask what is the amount of the funding that the needle exchange is looking at losing?
What we were asking for was $100,000 for, I believe it's like a 3-year funding cycle.
Three-year funding?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Wow. So now, what's going on with that? So you all are going to meet with the supervisor, the board of supervisors.
Yeah, we have a meeting with them, and we've been meeting repeatedly with some people from the Department of Public Health AIDS office as well to try to help us, you know, work something out. They do have a certain amount of emergency funds, and it seems as though that may work out, but we may be leaving the Haight-Ashbury free clinics in order to carry on and so either be fairly independent, but also we may have a place called Casa Seguro in Oakland as our new fiscal agent.
Okay.
So enormous internal changes.
But you'll still stay at the building?
We're hoping to still stay at the building, but that also is up in the air, as well as the youth outreach that is sort of our sister program. So it may be that we're also asking the Board of Supervisors to try to help us find affordable rent in the area, you know, because that's definitely the point, is to keep the program in that area so that it's accessible to the clients that we serve.
All right. And so you're having this benefit, which is in part to help fund the needle exchange?
Yeah, and it's going to be awesome. It's Wednesday night, just 2 days from now, at 9 p.m. at the Elbow Room, which is on Valencia Street, pretty close to 17th. And it's going to be pretty saucy. We're going to have some burlesque, the Chainsaw Chubettes, and we're also going to have some dancers from the Lusty Lady doing go-go dancing and lap dancing and pretty much donating it all to the cause of the needle exchange. And there's going to be a bunch of bands, Mr. California and the State Police, Night After Night, Dame Good, Dan Pothas Trio, and the Dan Pothas Trio. So quite a variety of stuff, some makeup metal, a lot of dancing going on, and we're asking for like $10,000 to $10,000 donation, which sounds really crazy, but who knows? You know, we get grants from foundations sometimes.
Nice.
That there would be an individual who would want to be our sugar daddy.
Yeah. So if you're rich and you're listening to this small internet broadcast and this small pirate station on Pirate Cats, you know where to go Wednesday night to blow some cash. And so this is going to start at 9 o'clock, right?
Yeah, 9 p.m.
9 o'clock at the Elba Room, which is at 647 Valencia, in between 17th and 18th.
That's it.
All right, Sarah, any last comments before we wrap it up?
I would say that's it. If anybody, you know, wants to talk more about harm reduction, if anyone has questions about it, you can go to our website. It's www.sfna.org. You can also go to NASEN.org. That's the North American Syringe Exchange Network. That's NASEN.org. Or Harm Reduction Coalition. I think that they're the harmreductioncoalition.org, too.
And how about, is there a website for the SF Needle Exchange?
Yeah, that's the sfne.org.
So S-F-N-E. Can you spell that? I'm not getting that.
Okay, it's just like an acronym for San Francisco Needle Exchange.
Oh,
S-F-N-E. Needle E.
Okay, I get it. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for your time, Sarah. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you.
Right on. Bye. All right, you just heard from Sarah with the San Francisco Needle Exchange doing a brief interview about an upcoming benefit for their program, which is going to be held at the Elbow Room in San Francisco on Valencia Street this Wednesday with a variety of dancers, performers, and musicians there. And so we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back to the calendar. You're listening to Enemy Combatant Radio, our weekly news broadcast, which is broadcast over Pirate Cats, 87.9 and 104.9 FM in the East Bay. Thank you.
All right, it's time for the activist calendar on Enemy Combatant Radio. Starting off with tomorrow, Tuesday, at 12:30 p.m., the San Francisco Gray Panthers will have a panel discussion called Watching Big Brother Watch Us, Immigrants and Citizens. And this is going to be at the Unitarian Universalist Center at 1187 Franklin Street. That's between Geary and O'Farrell in San Francisco. Speakers will include Renee Salcedo and Riva Antin, talking about the attack on immigrant and civil rights, from the Minutemen to the Real ID Act, which bars immigrants from driver's licenses and curbs the eligibility to apply for political asylum, and laws banning health care for immigrants. Speakers will also address the recent San Francisco grand jury subpoena of animal rights advocates and increased government repression, like the recent Operation Falcon, where over 10,000 progressives were arrested nationwide over a short period of time, including over 200 in San Francisco. Renee Salcedo and Riva Intine will talk about the implications of these threats, what people can do to fight them, and give examples of how people are already organizing against them. At 4 p.m. on Tuesday, the Barrington Collective will be holding a free creative writing class for youth aged 10 and up at the Navalon Bakery. That's at 2798 Russell Street in Berkeley. The free creative writing class will teach about the process of writing fiction, from brainstorming, developing, description, revising, and editing short stories. The class is taught by Laura Zink, a student of English literature at Mills College in Oakland, and also author, editor, and publisher of the creative writing zine NPFO. This class will be every Tuesday and Thursday from June through July 28th. Tuesday at 7 p.m., the Barrington Collective will have another free class, this one on alternative education. The course will discuss the kinds of existing alternative education that from the Albany Free School in New York State to the Making Changes Freedom School in Richmond. The course will also discuss the history, principles, and realities of free schools and libertarian education, the problems with public schools, and the crisis of the Oakland Unified School District and the East Bay Free School Project itself. The course will be held, again, at the Navalon Bakery, 2798 Russell in Berkeley.
And more stuff going on in San Francisco Tuesday, which is tomorrow, at 6 p.m., Super Berkeleyan Organizing for Library Defense, BOLD, we'll hold a rally and a press conference to protest the Board of Library Trustees' installation of radio frequency identification, or FID, tracking tags in the Berkeley Public Library books, CDs, videos, DVDs. BOLD speakers and RFID experts, Electronic Frontier Foundation. Oh, what a great place. ACLU, SNFU, and Library Users Association on health, labor, and privacy issues, and technology's workability. The BOLD rally will precede the Berkeley City Council meeting, and that will be at 7 p.m., at which there will be a public hearing on the budget. Opposers of RFID support a potential tax increase for the library only if RFID is taken out. Press conference and rally will take place at the Old City Hall, 2134 MLK Jr. Way and Austin Way in Berkeley. Tuesday at 7 p.m., the Barrington Collective will offer a free conflict resolution skill class at the Oscar Wilde Co-op, 2410 Warrington Street in Berkeley. The course offers different approaches to conflict, teaching different conflict styles, active listening, effective communication, and the basic philosophies that aid in transforming interpersonal conflict. So, there's a lot of stuff going on at the Barrington Collective this month. Tuesday at 7 p.m., the Answer Coalition is holding a forum on Cuba, 45 years of struggle against U.S. imperialism, at the Berkeley Unitarian Fellowship, 1924 Cedar Street at Bonita, near downtown Berkeley Park. The forum will discuss the reasons behind U.S. terrorism against Cuba and the island's struggle for self-determination, and will offer video testimony from families in Cuba who were victims of U.S. terrorism. The forum will also provide an update on the struggle
to expedite anti-Cuban terrorists, Posada Querides, to Venezuela. Hear about the case of the Cuban Five anti-terrorist fighters. $3 to $10 donation benefits the ongoing work of the communities to free the Cuban Five. For more information or to reserve free child care, call 415-821-6545.
On Wednesday at 9 a.m., there will be a rally to oppose state harassment of activists and support the 10 activists who have been subpoenaed to a grand jury at the federal courthouse, 450 Golden Gate Avenue in San Francisco. 10 Bay Area residents, including animal advocates, alternative media members, prisoner rights activists, and members of the Greater Bay Area progressive community, have been subpoenaed to a federal grand jury in San Francisco. The first hearing is Wednesday, the 22nd. Wednesday at 9 a.m., the Barrington Collective will hold a free class Insects for Kids ages 5 to 10 at the Ecology Center, 2530 San Pablo in Berkeley. The class will take a look at the lives of insects from ladybugs to butterflies. The class will learn about insect morphology, behavior, and life cycles of bugs. Students will also enjoy real-life specimens and art projects they get to take home. The class is offered by Eric, is a geology student at UC Berkeley who teaches kids in a variety of Asian subjects, including chemistry, biology, and physics. The class is drop-in friendly. Wednesday at 11 a.m., the Peninsula branch of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom is sponsoring Listening for Change at the Lytton Plaza on University and Emerson in downtown Palo Alto. There will be banners, tables, chairs, food handouts, and resources as the speakers discuss the events of September the 11th, terrorism, and how to create a safer, better world for our children and all children. All welcome.
On Wednesday at 7:30, Christina Morrissey's film Lethal Medicine will be at the Humanist Hall at 390 27th Street in Midtown Oakland between Telegraph and Broadway. Lethal Medicine will look at vivisection, animal air experimentation in the cancer research, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, birth defects, vaccination, spinal cord injury, AIDS, and in the testing of cosmetics and chemical substances such as pesticides and pharmaceutical drugs. The films are for the film is free, but a $5 donation is accepted. Wednesday at 5:30, the World Affairs Council sponsors Expanding Freedom, Building Democracy, and Ending Tyranny, a panel discussion with Lauren Craner, president of the International Republican Institute, IRI, and Kenneth Woolock, president of the National Democratic Institute, NDI. See, there is no difference. Craner and Woolock will discuss the Democrats' elections in Iraq, Afghanistan, Palestine, Zimbabwe, Ukraine, and Kyrgyzstan, and how the elections are not always open and fair, nor do they always produce the outcomes expected. Program starts at 6 p.m. at the San Francisco City Club, 155 Sansom, 10th floor, San Francisco. Council and City SF City Club members are free, non-members are 15. Wednesday at 7, The Barrington Collective hosts a free speculative and practical folklore class at La Peña Cultural Center, 3105 Shattuck in Berkeley. The free class will look at folk practices in the United States, and specifically Southern and Southeastern Pennsylvanian, Appalachian, and Ozark folk practices. The class will cover the beliefs, superstitions, and charms of American folk practices with a few practical demonstrations. Taught by Thomas Albin, who has over a decade of experience working with American folklore, he is fully conversant with the native practices of hex and craft, hoodoo, conjure, and the practices of the Appalachian and Ozark mountain folk. Thomas applies his knowledge of these practices to serve the needs of the community in various areas. The class is drop-in friendly. And we're running out of time, but we'll try quickly to finish the rest of this calendar for this week.
On Thursday at 5 p.m., New College of California will host the U.S. premiere screening of Fallujah 2004 by Toshikuni Doi at New College, 666 Valencia Street. That's in San Francisco. Fallujah 2004 is a 55-minute documentary of the siege and destruction wrought against the people of Fallujah after the U.S. invasion of Iraq. In April 2004, the U.S. forces invaded Fallujah with several thousand U.S. soldiers. About 730 people were killed and 2,800 were injured in the siege and attacks by the U.S. military. Toshikuni Doi interviews medical workers and teachers as well as people in the community about the horrendous assault and the cost of it for the people of Fallujah. There's a $3 donation requested. Another free school class by the Barrington Collective will be on Thursday at 6 p.m. It's a class on creating a California 501c3 nonprofit. This will be at the Long Hall Info Shop, 3124 Shattuck in Berkeley. The workshop goal is to actually form a nonprofit corporation during the class. All ages are welcome, and the class size has a maximum of 5 persons. Email for advanced registration, freeschoolyes@yahoo.com. This class will be meeting June 23rd, July 14th, July 28th, and August 11th.
And Thursday at 7 p.m., the New College of California hosts Dale Sorensen, Gail Fremont, and Camilla Schneider for the benefit series, So How'd You Become an Activist? At the New College 777 Valencia, and that's between 17th and 18th Street in San Francisco. Longtime human rights activist Dale Sorensen, George Farmuth, and Camilla Schneider